Hello, I'm Dr. Stacey Ellis, clinical psychologist. You're partaking in Liberation Healing Early Childhood, the 2-hour introduction. You're on part 3 of 4, Trauma, Stress, and Triggers. Here we go. So in section 1, we talked about the logical mind and the subconscious being the inner child, and how these two interact with each other and how they impact our decision making. Part 2, we discussed programming and imprinting in early childhood and how that impacts the way we believe about ourselves and the world. Section 3, we're going to look at how all of those components impact us in our day-to-day lives and how it shows up in our body and in our reactions and in our emotional selves. So I'm going to smatter some science throughout section 3. And the first thing I want to address is the polyvagal theory. Essentially, our nervous system is in a culmination of life experiences. How cool is that? It's living through our cells. Now, the nerve I mentioned, the vagus nerve, it's the ventral vagal nerve that goes through the heart and up through the brain. And that is said to be the only way the mind and the body have communication. And the interesting thing about the ventral vagal nerve is it controls facial expressions, vocalizations, the inner ear, the larynx. It's the nerve that helps promote connection, spirituality, engagement behaviors, relationships. It lets the body know that we're safe. And that will determine if we go into fight, flight, or freeze, or if we stay in that calm parasympathetic state, which is actually vitally important to build connections and closeness with people. This concept is called neuroception. Neuroception is the nervous system's detection of safety and risk in the environment. We also can call it heart presence. And when this is malfunctioning, because of our programming and our beliefs, it can cause us a lot of suffering and a lot of reactivity in the nervous system that really isn't meant to be there because of our misinterpretations. I'll give you an example. There was a research study done with people that were diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And what they did was each day, they had a doctor come in and engage with the patient for 5 minutes a day. And people that were not diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, they started feeling more comfortable and at ease and safe. Their neuroception indicated that this person was caring and that they were there for them. And so their cues from the environment was that this was a safe person over time. Now, the person with borderline personality disorder, the more they had interaction with the person, the less safe they felt. They interpreted the warmth of their voice, their open communication style, as something threatening, probably based on programming and beliefs from childhood that what appears to be safe is likely not. And so their autonomic nervous system went into high alert and they were ready to react. So their body was literally working against them in this particular scenario, as ours can often do when we're misinterpreting situations. So the ventral vagal nerve becomes vitally important in our ability to make connections with others in the world and to feel safe. And so whatever beliefs and misinterpretations we have about the safety of others and the safety of the world can impact the way that our nervous system responds. Emotions. Let's talk about those for a moment. Often in Western medicine, emotions are not accounted for. We call it psychosomatic symptoms. We're not sure what exactly the diagnosis is. We decide it's psychological, right? But emotions are stored in our nervous system, and not just the ones that we're presently having, but the old ones are stored in our nervous system. And if you look at the research, skin, water, and air are conductors for vibration and sound. And so everything that's solid, this chair, my computer, this camera, my body, has a vibration, it has a sound, it has a frequency being an energy. And this frequency can create simple low frequencies or complex high frequencies, which creates geometric shapes. We call that sacred geometry. I'm not going to get into that, but it's actually the key to healing. The interesting things about frequencies is they don't discriminate between the self and other. So, for instance, if I'm sitting here and I'm thinking a judgmental thought, let's say about my neighbor, oh, they're inconsiderate, or they have a bad attitude, or I don't like the way they park their car, or whatever it is, my body doesn't know my emotional response or my thoughts about my neighbor are about my neighbor. My body can't distinguish between me or my neighbor. So I'm literally taking on those judgments for myself. Just like the imprinting, the body doesn't know the difference between my mom thinking and feeling that she's not enough and me thinking and feeling I'm not enough. There's no differentiation there. That might give a whole nother spin for you the next time you start thinking about judging someone else or criticizing someone else. So the thing is, our negative emotions, that frequency can detune the vagus nerve and cause reactivity in the nervous system. Likewise, negative thoughts can detune the brain waves. When you look at EEG waves, it can detune the brain waves, which can also create health issues in the body. So Dr. Emoto did a study that's related to this, but not directly. It's correlated. And I'll put a picture here, hopefully, in this video series. So he did this study, and he took water, because we say water is a conductor for frequency and emotional charge. And he did some interesting things with it. And this has been done, the study's been done over and over. You can look it up, Dr. Emoto Water Study on YouTube. And he did it a few different ways, but he labeled some of the petri dishes with an emotion: sad, happy, joyful, hate, love, and then crystallized the water to see what would happen. He also did the study by saying and projecting those emotions, I hate you, I love you, onto the water. The specifics of the studies I'm not going to go into here. I'm just giving you a general overview. But the outcome was astounding. If you look at the crystallized water, there is a specific theme. All of them look different, but you will notice the ones that were positive in connotation, like thank you, love and appreciation, or even someone like Mother Teresa. They're in these beautiful snowflake, unique snowflake-like shapes. And the ones that were negative, you make me sick, I will kill you, I hate you, Adolf Hitler, look like runny goo. And if you think about it, our body is made up of more than 70% of water, and we're conducting those emotions throughout our body. And so we are literally crystallizing those experiences into our body. Okay, so with that knowledge that our brain waves, our emotional state can impact the body in a significant way, let's talk about trauma. How many of you out there feel like you've experienced some type of trauma in your lifetime, whether it's an injury, a car accident, a war, something more serious? The way we define stress, it's a clinical stressful occurrence outside the range of normal experience, and it's distressing. So it might be outside of the normal experience, but what's distressing to one person might not be distressing to another. So I have a lot of people come in and compare themselves and say, well, I'm reacting really poorly to this car accident, and my friend was in the passenger seat and they're not reacting the same way, so I feel like I have a problem. Well, it has to be distressing. The research shows that 60% of adults reporting report experiences of abuse or other childhood family difficulties and circumstances in childhood. This is in the United States. 26% of children in the United States will witness or experience a traumatic event before they turn four. That is during that vital imprinting age. Okay? And it is said that in today's society, trauma is a common occurrence that can be caused by benign events. Because again, what we're interpreting as safe and unsafe is maladaptive based on the programming that we've had. Okay, so some of you are sitting there going, well, I don't have stress, so why is this important to me? I mean, I don't have trauma, so why is this important to me? Well, let me define the difference between stress and trauma, okay? Stress is an experience that disrupts the normal coping mechanisms, and trauma is an experience that overwhelms the normal coping mechanisms. That's the only difference, a disruption and an overwhelm. Essentially, there is no difference. Chronic stress and trauma show up in the nervous system the same way. I have never done a workshop where no one has raised their hand and said, I've never had stress or trauma. If you've had stress or trauma, it is stored in your nervous system. So all controllable stress can also have the same biological effect as trauma. Controllable stress meaning the amount of stress you put yourself under, how much you work, how much you're taking care of other people, how much sleep you get, what you're eating. Like, these are all controllable stressors that can actually impact the body as trauma when we're under chronic stress. Okay, I'm going to quickly go over types of trauma. We've got a simple trauma, one occurrence, complex trauma, extended period of time. Let me differentiate these two. Simple trauma. A soldier's on the battlefield and they see a close friend get killed. Complex trauma. You are someone living in the war-torn country where bombs are going off all the time and you're afraid for your life. It does not mean that one is more severe than the other. It just means they're different. So another complex trauma could be chronic bullying or chronic abuse. Simple trauma, a car accident, or a natural disaster, okay? We also have things like compassion fatigue, an intense experience in one's own emotions that we suppress or we don't acknowledge. People that are nurses or doctors in the ER, when we see patients come in and they die on the table or something traumatic happens on the table, I have doctors and nurses in my practice all the time that come to me that have compassion fatigue because they're having an emotional experience, but they're suppressing it, not acknowledging it, but that's living in the body as trauma and stress. And then we have innocent trauma. It might be a physical trauma, but you don't have an emotional charge with it. Okay. You get a concussion. You don't remember it. You don't have emotions attached to it, but it still traumatizes the body and potentially the nervous system, even though you don't have an emotional connection to it. Okay. So something I want to add about this, when we're not actually dealing with these traumas, when we don't have outlets or ways of processing these experiences, it's like we're driving in a car, okay? We have the foot fully on the gas and the foot on the brake. And what's happening? The engine's revving, right? The engine's revving. Another example is a pot of water on the stove and you put the lid on and it's boiling and it's bubbling. And all you need to do is lift the lid so that the steam can come out. And what happens? Then it goes down, right? But most of us are walking around with our engines revving or our pot ready to boil. I have people come in to see me. It's like, I feel like I'm almost at my max, or I'm so overwhelmed. I'm going to have an explosion, or I'm going to reach that point where I'm going to have a freak out, right? So this is a great example of trauma and stress in the body that isn't being dealt with. Okay. So then in comes triggers, the other component. Triggers is the logical mind becomes overwhelmed by the subconscious reaction. So the inner child is reliving old unpleasant memories and experiences. And it's so overwhelming, it overpowers the logical mind's ability to process. And you get an emotional charge. And the inner child is just like, I need to be heard. I need to get this out, right? Most of us at that point will go into fight, flight, potentially freeze. Any cognitive or emotional event can be a trigger, so long as it perturbs the system into a state of disorder and it enters a neurofeedback loop. So whatever's occurring in that moment has an emotional memory attached to other events and memories from childhood. So when I spoke in part one at the beginning about what started all this for me, which was an abandonment trigger, when that relationship ended abruptly, it wasn't just that moment in time that was triggering me. A trigger is a negative feedback loop of all the moments in my life where I would have felt abandoned. So it wasn't just the breakup showing up. It was my mom leaving at 18. It was me not being taken care of when I was abused when I was little, and the list goes on. And so there's a negative neurofeedback loop in the system. So again, when I say what's hysterical is historical, my inner child was screaming, crying, reacting to the history of feeling abandoned and wanting my logical adult to desperately hear her and respond to her appropriately. And this can happen, let's say, with the fear of rejection. It's not just that moment that you're fearing. It's the history of all the times that you were rejected before, if that makes sense. So typically what's happening in the body when we're in a trigger is our rate of breath goes up, our blood flow increases, tension in the muscles, restriction, we feel like a ping in our gut. It's a really unpleasant experience. And then what happens? We want to do anything we can to get out of the trigger, anything we can to avoid circumstances that would trigger us. So in this case, the likely response for me would be to not get in another relationship so I don't feel abandoned, right? So that I don't have to experience the trigger. But that doesn't move me towards a place of love and freedom, right? So what else can I do besides running the other direction, stuffing it, avoiding it, denying it, going into all these different defense mechanisms? I always thought that if I did a lot of work on myself, then I would be able to, the best I could do was recognize my trigger in the moment, respond to it appropriately, calm myself down to the best of my ability, and just move through it. But through the modalities I've learned and through the research I've looked at, I've actually been able to clear the majority of my triggers from my nervous system. I no longer have an abandonment trigger, truly, and it has been tested since that breakup, and it's okay if somebody leaves my life. I have freedom and non-attachment to people coming and going in my life. I'll tell you more about that. Okay, so stress and triggers and trauma in the body. Up to 75% of doctors have no physical explanation for a lot of medical conditions, and they're labeling them psychosomatic, as I told you. 80% of back pain is unclassified and unknown. Could it be emotional? Could it be the nervous system? This is very important. Traumatic symptoms are not caused by the event, but by the frozen residue of energy that has not been resolved and discharged. This residue remains trapped in the nervous system. Let me say that again. Traumatic symptoms are not caused by the event or the experience itself. So, my breakup did not cause my traumatic symptoms. But the frozen residue, the frozen energy, the undealt with abandonment from my past, the unacknowledged inner child that remained trapped and unnoticed and unresolved in my nervous system, in my emotional body, that caused the traumatic symptoms. And when we're unable to flow through trauma and complete our instinctive responses, we undermine our whole lives. We become cautious, inhibited, victimized, and we reenact old scenarios over and over and over because we're not in the flow. So let me explain a little bit deeper what I'm speaking about this fight, flight, freeze. So a little science review from eighth grade. We've got the autonomic nervous system. We've got the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic. The parasympathetic is the relaxed, I'm chilling after a long day. It's rest, it's calm. It's digestion, social engagement. And then we got the sympathetic nervous system. This is our fight flight response, where the body comes onto high alert. It says we're unsafe and we need to protect ourselves. Okay? Now that was the original theory. The polyvagal theory breaks the parasympathetic down into two umbrellas. So we have the dorsal vagal response, which is a freeze immobilization response. And we see this in animals, for instance, playing possum. Possums instinctually go into freeze mode so that their prey does not kill them because the prey wants a fight. And so they'll often become disinterested and walk away. So we call it the freeze response or playing possum. What also happens in freeze response, right before a prey is about to devour an animal, it'll have a huge increase of opioid release so that it actually doesn't feel the pain. And it literally freezes up so that it doesn't experience death the same way. Okay, so then we have the ventral vagal, which I discussed with you, which is our social engagement and our connectivity. It is also where we have our rest and digestion and calm. Okay, so we want the ventral vagal interpreting the world appropriately. But when it's not, we go into the sympathetic fight flight response. So what happens when we're misinterpreting the world based on our programming and our beliefs? You can be sitting there cruising social media. Oh my goodness, look at so-and-so's comment. Oh no, I only got 10 likes. I don't feel safe because I don't feel like I'm enough. I feel like I'm rejected. Now you're in a trigger and you're in fight, flight, freeze response. But the truth is you're not in any danger. It's a misinterpretation of the environment. And this is happening all the time to where people are walking around on a low grade, high alert in their nervous system all the time. I'll give you an example. There's a deer. It's prancing through the forest. It hears a rustling in the bush. It sees a bear. Its sympathetic nervous system comes on high alert. We want to hope that it goes into flight. Everything's on high alert. It goes, it runs, it runs, it runs, it runs. It comes to a field, looks around, shakes it off, shaking out, getting in flow, the stress in the nervous system. The danger is over. It returns to the parasympathetic, calm state. Now, as humans, because we can perceive with our prefrontal cortex the past and the future, this is what we tend to do. We're the deer. Running, 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 flight mode. Don't want to get caught by the bear. We're in the field. Look around. Wait a second. Last time I was in this field, there was a bear. So I need to stay on high alert. Or, wait a second, what if there's a bear around that next turn? I need to stay on high alert. So then we stay in this chronic state of hypervigilance, which depletes our endocrine system, our pineal gland. It causes sleep issues, mood issues, hormone issues, energy issues, health issues in general. So I'm going to put a link where you can see this polar bear shake out and use its natural ability to shake out stress from the body. Okay? Polar bears are at the top of the food chain where they are. They are the predator. Humans are technically their only prey. And so you'll see in the video this helicopter, and they're shooting darts at this poor bear. He's terrified out of his mind. So obviously he's in flight mode. He's fleeing the scene as fast as he can. He gets shot by the dart, and he's starting to come to, and you see him just shaking and convulsing. And then he goes into calm, gentle breathing. When this bear comes out of this situation, he's going to be just fine because he discharged the stress in the nervous system. Who has dogs? My dog, when it gets scared, it starts shaking, right? It does this really fast little shake. Well, I used to think that it was shaking because it was stressed out. I'm like, okay, it's okay, calm down. But what it's actually doing is it's shaking out the stress from the body. It's releasing it. And the amazing thing is humans have this same capacity. An incredible discovery. It's called this type of modality is called trauma release exercise. And it's one of the modalities offered in my 4-day intensive. But that's just one example of the many ways that the body, as miraculous as it is, can discharge stress and trauma from the nervous system. We have that capacity, but most of us, we don't want to walk around twitching or shaking, right? Oh, that's socially unacceptable. Some of us wouldn't mind. I remember when I was in my therapy and we were talking about some childhood trauma or thing, it was really stressful topics. I would sit there and I twitch and stutter, and I thought there was something seriously wrong with me. And it turns out that that was an adaptive function of my body, was trying to get the stress out. So, recap. The way you make decisions is 90 to 95% your subconscious inner child programming. The way that we react to our environment and the way we deal with stress and emotions and trauma is directly correlated to our subconscious and inner child. So then the question becomes, what do we do with this? If we want to make better decisions for ourselves, if we want to have more freedom in our lives, if we want to clear out all that original root programming from zero to the logical mind around 6, 7 to 10, what do we do? Watch part 4 and you'll find out.